It's time for Cal's Wine Chat. The oak barrel is synonymous with wine, but what is it about oak that makes it unique? This week, we're talking about all things oak with our resident wine expert, Cal Lee. Sorry, I probably should say resident oak expert.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an expert in lots of things. Actually, I now know more about oak than any other plant apart from one at this point,
Okay.
Which is a weird thing to be able to say with quite a bit of confidence.
And just to be clear for the listeners out there, we are talking about the wood oak and not the Australian flavored milk drink.
No, I mean, what an episode that would have been though.
just to drop that on the
yeah breath. Yeah just yeah. To... Just like actually we're just talking about flavored milk. I do actually know way too much about flavored milk now.
I'm sure you do.
But you know this is the life I've chosen to live.
This is but of course this is wine chat, not milk chat.
This is yeah milk chat. You have to tune in on Tuesday for that one.
Tuesday for milk chat. So does an wood oak barrel do for wine? I'm gonna think about.
you've ruined it for the rest of the thing.
It's just the brain word in my head. I'm going to have to not try and not laugh.
No, it's all good. We're gonna make it through it together now.
What does an oak barrel do for wine?
Yeah. I mean, look, oak barrels first and foremost are a thing to store wine in.
Sure. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Man, we're going to do this bit every week, aren't we?
Yeah. The legs like a centipede.
obviously in antiquity, the first wine storage vessels were typically made out of clay. We see that with a lot of the amphoras, you know, your sort of Greek and Roman era jars and stuff like that. Clay is fragile, and a lot of these vessels were kind of single use or were like buried and put in place so that like they weren't being moved and thus could be reused. And then as sort of like the need for trade networks start, we start sort of needing to have different vessels to store things in. And that's sort of where the oak barrel comes up, especially once you start having like, once you start getting things like bars and taverns and places where like they will be dispensing alcohol to people, you need ways that it can be like shipped and stored and all that stuff. And so that's sort of when the oak barrel sort of becomes really, really widely dispersed. And not just in wine, it happens for beer and spirits as well, obviously. So first things first, does a container, allows you to move wine around. Great, fantastic. We can also use it as a fermentation vessel, which is, you know, still pretty common for certain wine styles. We'll sort of go into a bit more about that later. But the other thing it lets wine do is age. Because oak is a porous material, it's got a grain, like, you know, it's a wood. And because of that, as you sort of, even just in the course of a day, as you sort of go from your like cold temperature at the middle of the night to your heat of the day temperature, that oak is sort of slowly expanding and those tiny little pores in the grain are opening up and that's going to suck in the wine there. And then as it cools down, they contract, they push the wine out. And so you sort of get this breathing motion. And that is sort of a lot of where we sort of get this like micro oxygenation and aging effect sort of coming from, is that breathing of the barrel.
Right, right. And obviously, oak is quite an expensive material.
Yeah.
Why oak over other milks? I mean, wood.
Yeah.
And surely there are cheaper options available for coopers to make barrels out of.
Yeah, and so this is when we're sort of going to start to get into the chemistry a little bit more. Like, you can make wooden containers out of lots of things, especially if you're storing things that are basically water-based in them. You actually have a lot more options. The difficulty is, because wine and beer and spirits, obviously, you know, most wines are 10 to 15% ethanol by volume.
Sure.
And ethanol is a really good solvent, which means that all of a sudden, if you're putting that into, let's just say like a eucalypt barrel, what you're going to get over the, like pretty quickly is basically have a barrel that is mainly full of like eucalypt oil, because it's going to dissolve into the alcohol layer, which is great if you want to make disinfectant, kind of terrible if you want to make something that's actually suitable for drinking.
Yeah, right, right. Cause I was literally just about to say, why not use eucalyptus?
So there's lots of... Basically, oak is one of the most sort of inert woods, both for the both for like water-based liquids and ethanol-based liquids. There are examples, and I've definitely seen, heard tale of these, where people are using other fruit woods, stuff like apple and cherry.
Sure.
I get the sense that that's a lot more common in Central and South America.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I've really seen much of.
Because apple and cherry woods would be, I think I've heard them more used in other types of spirits.
Yeah, you definitely see them like in sort of rums and whiskies and stuff like that. And sort of anything you're using for spirit production, you can usually pretty safely use for wine. But I think the other part of it is that it's a lot of it's tradition, you know what I mean? And there are very specific flavors that oak imparts that are now, because of the traditional use of it, have become synonymous with sort of certain wine styles and flavors.
Yeah, it's one of those, I suppose, one of those things that you don't realize how integral to the flavor of the wine the barrel is until you change the barrel.
Yeah.
You just don't think about that as a important part of the flavoring process.
Oh yeah, and one of the most like mind blowing things for me was when I was doing barrel filling a couple of vintages back, and like even just putting, you know, this is Chardonnay that's not finished fermentation, it's, you know, nearing the end of its life, just putting that into an oak barrel and the smell you get out of that, you're like, oh, by itself this sort of almost finished fermented wine is like a little sickly and like a bit fruity and doesn't have much there. But just even putting that into the barrel, the smell of it, you're like, oh, this is Chardonnay now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it is so specific, and it's really, it's sort of a little bit ephemeral in certain ways.
Sure. Okay, so that sort of brings us along nicely to our next question. So how does an oak barrel actually impart flavor?
Yeah, so there's sort of a few different ways that this happens. So we sort of talk about toasting, and I think this is really famous with bourbon, which is basically, like, for those of you who don't know, bourbon is required to be made in a new oak barrel that has what we call a heavy toast or a heavy char in it. Because basically, if you think about wood as being made of, like, cellulose and hemicellulose, which is basically really long chains of small sugar molecules that are sort of arranged to be, you know, sort of like how a diamond is made out of just carbon. They're being arranged in a way that gives them really good structure and lets them hold together. And so when you toast the inside of a barrel, all you're literally doing is usually heating it up or using fire to char the insides. Not only does that help to sort of like seal and set and structure the barrel in its sort of curved position, but it starts breaking down these cellulose compounds, not just into sugars, but there's a whole bunch of different aromatic compounds that sort of start to come out. You get your sort of, we call your hydrolyzable tannins, and these are sort of like your gallic acids and stuff like that. We talked about them in the tannin episode. You get certain important phenols, which we talked about in the phenolics episode, but like vanillin is the really big one here. That is the flavor that people associate with vanilla. You get it in really high concentrations in certain orchids, which is where the vanilla bean pod comes from. You can also extract it from certain animals. That's where the whole myth around, like, you know, beaver musk being used as vanilla extract sort of comes from. And they're sort of the really important ones. But the thing that happens is, depending on whether or not you're putting a pre-fermented juice in or whether you're putting a finished wine in, you actually end up extracting quite different chemicals, because the initial extraction happens quite quickly. And depending on the ethanol concentration of the wine is sort of what tier of these things that are going to pull out. So like things for vanillin, for example, are pulled out really, really readily if you've got a finished wine in there, because it needs that sort of higher ethanol level to dissociate into the liquid. Whereas if you're at that sort of lower tier, you tend to get more of those sort of like roasted almonds kind of compounds providing that kind of thing, especially if you're talking about your higher toast qualities, and they're literally just, you know, the bits that have, you get ones which just taste like caramel and brown sugar, because they're literally just cooked caramel and brown sugar sort of things on there.
And so, to sort of round this all out, so oak is quite expensive to produce barrels of. But the flavor of oak is integral to what a wine tastes like, and what we associate with specific varieties of wine.
Yeah.
And so is there a way to impart oak flavors into wine that don't use barrels?
For sure, for sure. And we sort of see this a lot with typically like really large production stuff that needs to have oak influence on it, but like is either at a literage, where putting this thing to barrel would be so incredibly cost prohibitive that, like, it wouldn't make any sense, or where it's a time thing. And you need these sort of quicker extractions. So you sort of have staves, which are sort of what it sounds like. It's a stave off an oak barrel. And you can suspend that in a tank. There's all sort of tricks that you can do to increase the surface area of it. Like most things, increasing the surface area increases how quickly it imparts. And stuff that you still just see quite a lot is stuff like oak chips. Mm. There's quite a few people who will actually use oak chips, even for wines that are going to barrel, in like red ferments before they're fully finished crushing all the berries, just because it sort of helps to stabilize certain colors and pigments and sort of helps to get a lot of those flavors into the actual wine so that, you know, you can use a lot more old oak in the actual storage process and you don't have to worry about that. When you get to chips and dust, in my experience, they tend to be a little cruder. Like, they tend to be less integrated in mm-hmm. with the actual wine. And this isn't a thing that I think everyone's going to notice. It definitely is a thing that you sort of get trained to notice. But you'll sort of find that if a wine has spent significant time in oak and has been going through that, like, you know, we talk about that breathing process, the flavor and the structure of the oak barrel tends to be really well integrated with the wine because it's about spending time. That's sort of what gets you that finesse in there. Whereas when you're doing the sort of these quicker extractions or you're doing sort of more direct additives, you might get a lot of those flavor compounds still in there, but it's all those really small little bits of finesse that are really hard to sort of pinpoint because they're all very, very small things. But once you get them as a composite whole, that's what gives that sort of oakiness to a wine. And so you're sort of just getting the flavor components of that without all the other little bits of finesse, and it can sometimes feel a little disjunctive or out of place.
Right. And so what oak flavor imparted goodness are you drinking this week?
We're going to talk about the LS Merchants Butter Barrels.
Oh.
This is actually... So Chardonnay from Market River. I just got to taste a new vintage yesterday, which was pretty cool.
Oh, good on you.
It sort of does what it says on the tin. So basically, this is they made this as a real small batch thing originally because a client requested, like, you know, they wanted a really big old school Chardonnay, and it was so incredibly popular. They're like, okay, I guess we have to make this every year now. And it is very much that sort of like 80s style, like big oak influence, pretty much full malo, really rich ripe stone fruit characteristics of it. But this thing's really fun. I think we're sort of trending slightly more back towards this style of Chardonnay again after sort of being in the very like lean, clean, super mm-hmm. precise world for a while. And whilst this might not necessarily be like the coolest wine out there, I think in terms of like big, delicious, beautiful Chardonnays, it's a really, really great example of it. Recommending that one.
Lovely stuff. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Another great chat.
Absolutely fantastic to be here.
About milk. Oh, wait, sorry, that's Tuesday.
Tuesday. About oak. Milk chats on Tuesday.
Yeah, that was a great wine chat. What can we look forward to next week?
Like I said, there's sort of an interview I'm in the works with. I don't know when that's going to pop up because it requires more than just scheduling myself, which I'm terrible at doing that.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, yeah. But hey, if you're around on Saturday, Urban Wine Walk Erskineville Newtown is going on and the Hive Bar will be hosting Kompinamaru.
Well, hey.
So, you know, come down and try some wine with that. There's also a bunch of other really cool little wineries, wine producers doing stuff all over the place. I think Glover's at Urco, Samantha May Wines is at Familia. Like lots of really cool stuff to check out there. And apart from that, I don't know. I'll probably do something really esoteric next week because I don't think this interview will be ready. But
it'll be a surprise for both of us.
Exactly. Always to me, you know.
It's been great to have you on, Cal. Love to have you.
Absolute pleasure.
See you next week.
See you next week.
That was Cal's wine chat with resident wine expert, Cal Lee.